First of all, let me say I'm really pleased that you guys came in tonight, and I want to start with this exercise that we're going to do together, and I'm not really going to give you a lot of explanation. We'll talk about it when we're done, but there's no right answers to this. There's no hook here. It's not like, I'm trying to get you to do a certain thing. I just want you guys to have some conversation around the table, okay? So you're going to kind of need to huddle where you can see the pictures, or you can stand up around them for a minute and then sit down for the conversation. I'm going to ask you a series of several questions, okay, and I'll give you a few minutes to answer them. We won't have a lot of time, so probably not everybody is going to get to answer every question in your group. So I'll kind of let you know when it's time to move on, okay? And each time we do a question, I'll ask someone different in the group to go first so that everybody's going to get a chance to answer at least a couple of the questions, okay? But what I want you to do is just have a little honest conversation, okay? And I realize, I'm guessing, that most of you probably don't really know each other. You didn't necessarily come into this seminar with friends from your campus or people that you know. So the first thing I'd like you to do is just very quickly, just take a minute, kind of go around the group, just tell your name and what campus you're from and what year in school you are. Okay, that'll just, you know, we'll just do the most basic of introduction. Name, what school you're from, what year in school you are. Okay, so do that right quick and then we'll start with the pictures. Okay, did everybody have a chance to do that? We everybody know at least a first name and where somebody's from? Okay, great. I want you to look at the images that are on your table. If you need to get up, move around where you can see them. I kind of have them all facing one direction, so get where you can look at them. And I would like for you to choose two of the images that you would say sort of describe your life right now. And then share with the group. No, don't pick them up. Yeah, leave them where everybody, because people can choose the same image, okay? All right, so, and just kind of share, and then take a minute and share with the group. Why did you share those images? So just jump in. Why did you choose those images to represent your life right now? Okay, everybody get done? Okay. Okay, let me give you a second question. All right. Which image, if you had to pick one, do you wish were a part of your life right now? Why? Okay, let me interrupt you here. I know we're not gonna, like I said, we're not gonna have time to do every one of them. So if I cut you off, I'm sorry. Okay, but here's what I'd like for us to do for this next question. We're gonna switch groups, okay, or switch sets of pictures. All right. So I'd like for this group to move over to this table, and Cindy, bring your group to this table, and you guys come over. You can leave your stuff or bring it. Doesn't matter. When we get done with the questions, you can go back and sit where you want. So. Got a new set of images. Okay, here's your question. Here's the question for this round. If you were going to choose one of these images to describe God, which image would you choose? What does that image say to you about God? Just one. Okay, next question. If you've had anybody in your group that kind of got cut off this last round or the one before, be sure they get to maybe go first, all right, the next time, so they don't always end up being the last one. Here's the next question. Think about your life so far. Which image would you say might best describe what you have experienced spiritually? Think about your life so far. What image best describes what you've experienced spiritually so far? Okay. We got one last question. And for this one, I want us to switch groups again. So, Phil, your group, come over here and everybody slide over. Okay, here's the last question. When you think about your spiritual journey, which image would you choose to represent what you wish were true? Last question was what represents your journey up to this point? What do you wish were true? All right, you can go back and sit wherever you'd like to sit, or just sit down where you are, either way. You just need to be able to see the whiteboard. Let's sit wherever you can see the whiteboard. Okay, let me ask you guys a couple of questions about the exercise that you just did. I'd be curious to know, like, did you like doing that? Was it enjoyable? Okay, why did you like it a lot? Like, talk to me. If you liked it, why did you like it? Say that. What? I'm curious, did any of you, and you're not going to have to tell me what, but did any of you share something with your group in this short amount of time, people you don't even know, that you felt like was pretty real, pretty honest, pretty vulnerable, that maybe you haven't even shared with anybody else since you've been here this weekend? Raise your hand if you feel like you did that. Okay. Yeah, the reason I did this, and I'll tell you a little bit more about this activity a little later, but the reason I did it was, the topic for this seminar is evangelism. Okay, so in case you wonder, like, where the heck is she going with this? who said stories? You know, you got to share some of your story as much as you chose to, wanted to. Nobody was making you share more than you wanted. And then you also got the opportunity to hear at least some little slices of some other people's stories. And I really do think, from my experience with evangelism, I am, when they asked me to do this seminar, I was like, oh, man, I feel like evangelism is something that I'm pretty weak in, really. It's not a strong suit of mine. And part of it is because I feel like sometimes the way that we're trained and taught to approach evangelism doesn't always fit me very well, and I feel like I'm much more of a relational person, and I really do feel like your generation especially, but the truth is, you know what, my generation, we need people to hear our stories, and we really long to be heard, to be understood, to have a safe place to tell people what the real scoop is on our life with people that we trust. And so I think, here we are in a setting that's somewhat artificial with people that you don't really know that well. And you guys had an opportunity and you took it to share some things at whatever level felt safe to you about your life. And I just wonder, how many times do we give our friends maybe who don't yet know Christ an opportunity to really tell their stories or slices of their story? You know, a lot of times we come at them with a lot of information. You know, I have some things I want to tell you. I want to be sure you've got the facts and, you've got these certain verses that you need to know. And that's true. I mean, there is some very important information that somebody needs to know in order to give your life to Christ and put your trust in Him, begin to walk with Him. But and we've heard some things even here this weekend, which I don't disagree with at all, just about, sometimes our opening with people is, if you were to die tonight, where would you spend eternity? It's true. There is some urgency. Life is short, and it only feels shorter the older that you get. So it really is short. There's an urgency. But there's sort of a tension there, because just as much as there's urgency, at the same time, I really do feel like God has time for us to take time to get to know people and know their story. There's no sense that we have to, like, rush someone or twist their arm or, man, you have to make this decision today. God will work in people's lives sort of in His time. And I would love to see us have sort of this movement and evangelism where we, you guys aren't all going to own a pack of photographs like this that you could, like, whip out and lay at a table, maybe, But you could, But I want to, like, kind of just get you thinking about how could you just begin to enter into somewhat natural, normal conversations with people who don't know Christ, just to evoke their story of kind of where they're at with God, where they'd like to be with God, or why they're not walking with God. Some people have some very legitimate reasons. They've had some hard things in their life, or they've been hurt by the church or by another believer. And man, we would do well to take time to hear those stories and try to understand that a little bit. I think there's a danger sometimes in evangelism of treating people like projects. And man, I don't know about you guys, but can't you kind of sniff that out when you feel like somebody's treating you like a project? They're kind of using you to get what they want, or to try to manipulate you to get you to do something that you're not even quite sure what that is yet, you know. And I think sometimes we've been guilty of that, you know, as Christians. And I'd really like for us to not be guilty of that. I just read a book recently, which I'd like to recommend to you. It's called Unchristian. Has anybody read this book or heard of it? I recommend it highly. It's called Unchristians, the title, and it's by a guy by the name of David Kinnaman. And it's put out basically by the Barna, George Barna study group, research group. And basically he just did all this research about what do people in your generation think about Christianity. You know, and basically he's talking, he talked both to people like you who are in the church, in Christian groups. He also talked to a lot of people who are not claiming to follow Christ. What's been their experience with the church, with Christ followers? And he just found that there's this a large discrepancy between what Christians think unbelievers think of them and what unbelievers really think of them. Like, we view ourselves as really, and I'm going to, maybe some of you aren't following Christ, I don't know, but pardon me, I'm going to assume for a minute and speak we. Those of us who are following Christ, we tend to assume that we're viewed as kind and compassionate, really caring and really genuine. The research didn't bear that out. That people who aren't Christ followers often feel like we're insincere and like we're just being manipulative to try to get somebody to kind of cross this line. So it was a pretty disturbing book for me, but it really challenged my thinking, and this made me begin to pray and say, God, you know, how do we change that perception, and not just the perception, but how do we become people who are really genuine, loving people as we try to engage folks that don't know Christ yet. And you know, it's been 4 years ago now, before I went to work for Focus International, I worked at Pier 1 for a while. It was kind of like this transitional job for me. And it was great. Yeah, great discounts on really cool stuff, you know, and I stocked up on stuff for my house. But I worked with, sorry, I'm going to choke myself here, trip myself. I worked with about, 8 to 10 people on a regular basis who were all in their 20s. And all of them were living with their boyfriend or their girlfriend. Every one of them, every single payday, all went out together as a group and spent probably, I kid you not, a third of their paycheck on pitchers of margaritas. That's what they did to celebrate, you know, payday. Two of the guys that I worked with were gay, openly gay. So I walked into this and I was like, wow. This is I've been around folks on college campus who don't know Christ, and I've shared the gospel a lot. But I just felt like, whoa, I am in way over my head. Here I am, you know, I'm like, at that point, I was about 48 years old. I was old enough to be their mothers, most of them. And they're just like living this like radically different lifestyle than most people in my life were living. And I was trying to figure out, how do I speak to that? How do I engage them? And we're standing around at the cash register, you know, when there's no customers and it's a slow evening. And, you know, all their coworkers they're trying to set this guy up with another guy, you know, on a date on a Friday night. Oh, I know this guy. He's really great. He's really cute. You really like him. And I'm like, whoa, you know, my head's kind of spinning here. I'm not used to being, you know, in these kinds of conversations. But you know what? The guys, I really liked them a lot. They were really funny. And I grew to really care about them. And I was trying to figure out, how do I speak truth into their life? How do I how do I engage them in a way that could make Jesus seem even slightly attractive to them, and to help them understand and realize that the things that they were choosing for their life were unfulfilling, unsatisfying, that were headed for, you know, some of them for destruction. Just the amount of alcohol consumed was just astounding at times. So, you know, I just think, you know, you guys live in that world. I mean, that story for me was a little bit unusual, to be running with that kind of a crowd, you know, every day when I go to work. For you guys, that is like your norm. That's the people you work with. It's the people you go to class with. That is not weird for you. That is the norm of our society. It's the norm of the college campus. So, you know, how do we cross those bridges? And I just feel like, you know, we have to learn how to do it. And I did. I feel like I did some things really well. I also feel like I did some things really bad. Like, I happened to work there at the time that Brokeback Mountain came out in the theaters. And I'm sorry, I had no ability to, like, have a conversation about that movie. I just was like, ah. So, you know, I really offended and hurt my friend that worked there, who was a guy who was gay, and I had to go back later and, you know, apologize. I had to go back and ask his forgiveness for some of the things that I said to him, because I just was like, you know, they started talking about it, and I just kind of got up on my high horse and, you know, kind of let them have it with both shotguns on how awful and wrong and horrible it was that people were going to go pay money. You know, well, you know, is that true? Well, yeah, but at the same time, I was not taking any consideration in that's this guy's life. It's his reality. And man, I just like totally fouled that up. So I had to go back to work the next day and say, Matt, I'm so sorry. You know, I just was really, really insensitive. Sorry, Matt, is that your name? That was this guy's name too. So, you know, you're going to make mistakes. I loved what Tim Elmore said tonight, just about, you know, we got to be willing to take some risks. You know, we got to try it. We got to go for it. But I do feel like if we can begin to have conversations with people, rather than just kind of feel like, okay, I got to have this presentation that I'm ready to whip out and impart a lot of information to you, we'll do better. We'll do better. So let me, I do want to show you something that I feel like has been helpful to me. And this is kind of what the seminar was advertised as, was one verse evangelism. And I do want to show you just sort of an illustration that you can use, if it's comfortable for you, if you're in a conversation with someone and you want to kind of help them think about where they're at in relationship to Christ. And I like it because I feel like it's a little bit more of a conversation than most evangelistic presentations. And it gives some opportunity for them to tell a little bit about their life, not to the same degree that you guys just did, but it opens some doors. So I'm going to quickly do this for you and just sort of demonstrate it. And then I'll answer any questions that you have about it. And then I'm going to give you some, I don't want you to take notes on this, okay? Don't take notes, because I want you to watch. I want you to watch, and I want you to enter into it. And when we're done, I have this all drawn out for you, and I'm going to give it to you, okay? So you'll have all the notes, I promise. Those of you that are like obsessive, compulsive note takers, I promise you'll get all the notes. So this will be easier for me to do, I think, if I don't just sort of like lecture you about it. But I'm going to pretend, if you'll allow me, and if you don't think this is weird, I'm going to pretend that this is not a group of 20 people and me, but that this is just me and one or two of you, and we're sitting right here at this table. You know, it's Matt and Phil and I and Leah. We're sitting here at this table over coffee at Starbucks, and the conversation has led me to draw this illustration for them, okay? And so I'm going to try to do it that way if I can. But I'm going to call on some of you to participate, okay? And if I don't call on you, I want you to feel free to participate. Just pretend, okay? Bear with me. Pretend that this is just three or four of us, okay, sitting around. Here's how I might do this. Leah, can I show you something? This is just a picture, okay? That I think might help you understand a little bit of what we've been talking about. It's kind of an illustration that shows how all of us, everybody, tries to find real life. And I think it's true, it would be true to say that everybody gives their life to or puts their trust in whatever they think is going to really meet their needs. What's going to really satisfy me? You know, what's going to give me real life? Okay. So I'm just going to write real life up there, because I think that's kind of what we're all looking for. So I'd like for you to help me think. Okay. Matt, help me think here. When you look at your friends on the college campus, what are some of the places that you see people looking to find satisfaction, real meaningful life? Phil, where do you see people looking? What's that? Girls, guys, somebody else. Where do you guys see people on campus looking? Okay, like what do you mean by sports? Are you talking about like athletes? Okay. So like being involved, like being successful as an athlete, or like school pride, OU, woo, go Sooners, you know, they won, or Nebraska, or Huskers, or whatever. Okay, so sports. Okay, what else? What's that? Yeah. Yeah, this is a big one. DVD, music, video games. Sometimes that's an escape as much as it is looking for life. Sometimes it's an escape from life, too. Where else? Okay. Other kind of models for life, or... let me add one here. Like, sometimes I think we look to other people's opinions. So kind of related, but yeah, like, what do other people think about me? Which, you know, leads to, if you want to use the word popularity, like, hey, am I cool? You know, am I in the cool crowd? That's where life is found for me, is if I walk in the room, everybody thinks she's cool. And then I got it made. What else? Career, yeah, looking for the right career, which sometimes that, you know, can be related to that. If I just had a lot of money, I know, related to the girl guy thing, for me, in my life, I've spent a lot of time thinking, you know, if I just had a husband, you know, I'm single, never been married. You know, man, if I just had a husband, my life would be full and rich and good. That's where real life would be, if I had a husband. What's that? Okay, so yeah, take it a step further. If I just had a family, or if I had a better family, if I was from a better family, a different family. I'll throw another one in here. You know, Leah, you know me. You know me long enough to know that I'm a Christian, and I'm trying to follow Jesus in my life. And you know, I definitely think He's the place that, you know, for me, I'm learning to try to go to find life and get my needs met. I don't always do that. You know, I'm as prone as anybody to still kind of go to other places, but that's definitely that's kind of where I'm at. It's where my heart is. What's that? Religion. Sorry. Yeah, just okay. Elaborate. What do you mean? Like, how do people go there looking to find real life, get their needs met? Yeah, a lot of people just are rule keepers. You know, if I just kind of keep my nose clean and do the right things, keep the rules, stay out of trouble. Anybody struggle with this one? Just kind of perfectionism when it comes to grades in school. Just gotta do well. Anything else that we're missing? Is there anything else that's significant up there that we should have that we? Yep. Busy. You know, people are in sororities and, man, is anybody a music major? I mean, man, there's no major that'll eat your lunch faster than music or architecture. That's a killer. And sometimes people feel like, boy, I'm not really living, I'm not really fulfilling my purpose in life unless I'm just killing myself with activities that I'm involved in, you know. Anything else that you guys feel like is a significant one we're missing? I mean, there's probably a whole bunch more. There's probably a whole bunch more that we could put up there. But for the sake of time, I have already written this up, but I'd like to show you a verse from the Bible that I think kind of speaks to this issue. This is a verse in Jeremiah. It's Jeremiah 2:13, and it says, I haven't got people's names. What's your first name? Lindsay. Lindsay, would you mind just reading that verse if you can read my handwriting up on the whiteboard? Cisterns. Cisterns. Cisterns, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, this is God speaking in the book of Jeremiah. And I just kind of want to point out a couple of things here. Whoops. God says, my people have committed two sins. And the first sin is they have forsaken me. What's your name? John. How would you define forsaken? Like if you had to put a definition down, what does it mean, do you think? Walked away from. That's good. Turned your back on. Yeah, it sometimes kind of gives you the implication that it's a place that you once were committed to something, but you've turned your back on it and kind of walked away from it. Kind of gives that idea. And that's essentially what God was saying to the people of Israel, that, you know, you have turned your back on me. You have forsaken me. And look what they've done. It says they have dug their own cisterns. Okay, Lindsay, I'm going to pick on you again. What the heck is a cistern? It's not a word that we use every day. It's like a well. Yeah, it's like a well. It's not a well, but it's like a well. Somebody at that table, add to Lindsay's definition. Anybody know? It collects water. Okay, yeah. It's in olden times, and even still today, like any farming families might know this. A cistern is something like where a place where there isn't a well that's producing water, but you need water. You dig a hole in the ground. And sometimes they like line it with clay or pack it, or maybe they would set down inside this hole they dug a clay pot of some kind, and they would fit it to fit in the hole in the ground. And then they would carry water and dump it in. So you would fill this cistern with water. So you brought the water to it, you filled it with water, and now you have this thing of water. And look how they got them. It says, they've forsaken me, the spring of living water, and they have dug their own cisterns. So what do you think it would entail to dig a cistern? to supply water, say, to a community, small community, what would it take? A lot of work. Yeah. Yeah. Typically, cisterns are dug in places a lot of times where they're like the ground is hard and there's not fresh well water. Yeah. What? Good heavens, you carry a Bible dictionary around.
I have it in my
No, that's right. You tell. Has it got a picture of it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it's like got rocks lined in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, read it. That'd be great.
A Hebrew term that means hole, pit, or more often well. The difference between cistern and well often is not apparent. In the innumerable cisterns, wells, and pools that exist in Palestine are evidence of the efforts of ancient people to supplement the natural water supply. The cistern of Palestine was usually a bottle or pear-shaped reservoir into which water could drain from a roof, tunnel, or courtyard. Limestone out of which the cisterns were dug allowed much of the water put into the cistern to escape after the 1930s.
Okay. All right, so this thing is like made out of lime. It's put into limestone. You're going to have to dig into limestone to put this cistern in. It's catching water that drains off of a roof, or somebody's carrying water and pouring it into it. So, I mean, this thing is it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to carry water and fill a cistern. But here's the problem, if you'll notice in this verse. What does it say, what's wrong with these cisterns? They're broken. And I would like to suggest to you that this verse in Jeremiah is, these things that we wrote up here, the verse in Jeremiah is speaking about these kinds of things. Jeremiah would say that these things are like cisterns to us, and every one of them is broken. There's a big, fat crack right in all of them. Which means that, you know, you've done all this work, you've dug your cistern, you've carried water, and you've hauled it, and the day that you're thirsty and you go out to the cistern to get a big old drink of refreshing water, guess what? All the water has like trickled out, run out of this thing. It's empty. Cistern is undependable as a source of water. It can work. It does work for a while, but they inevitably crack and spring leaks, and then the water runs into the ground. So they're very undependable as a source of water. And I want you to notice what God says that He is. God says He is the spring of living water. What is the difference? Somebody at this table over here. What's the difference between a spring and a cistern? Anybody ever been hiking? Yeah. Yeah. It's a continual source of water. I grew up hiking. My dad was a big outdoorsman. Many times we would hike and hike and hike and follow a creek, and you'd get to the top of a mountain and you would find the source of this water that you've been hiking next to all day. And it was cold and it was fresh, and you could drink it. It was pure. Like down below, you couldn't drink it because like cows had been walking in it and other things. but you get up to the top at the source and you could just drink it right out because it was pure. It was coming right out of the ground. And God says that's what He's like. He's not a cistern that leaks. He's a spring of pure living water. So let me just do this. Like I'm going to, you know, I said this a minute ago when we were doing this, but I think for me, this has been a place that has been easy for me to go again and again, thinking, gosh, if I just had a husband, you know, my life would be great. And I go to that cistern and, you know, there's never any water in it. It always is just leaked out on me. I think sometimes for me, this has been a big one. I've never really had a lot of money, but I think I've often lived with the idea that if I just had more money, I'd have more security in life. I'd just feel better about life. I'd be more satisfied if I had a little more money. I wonder if a couple of you would tell me, when you look at some of these cisterns that are up there, has there been one that you kind of feel like you would say, yeah, that's a place I have been prone to go to try to find real life? I've seen myself do that. Popularity. Somebody else? Yeah. Okay. Busyness. One more. Yeah. And you know, these things, they always disappoint. They may satisfy for a little while, but they always, in the end, come up dry. They always disappoint. And I want to remind you, Leah, I want to remind you, we've talked about this before. Jesus, you'll notice, is the only thing I put up here that I didn't draw a crack in. Because he really is the only spring of living water. He is the one place where we can always go, where we'll never be disappointed. Doesn't mean life won't be hard. Doesn't mean there won't be some hardship. But He will satisfy us. He promises to meet our deepest needs. Security, love, acceptance, a place to fit in. we find that in Christ. He really promises that. So I really want to ask you to think, Matt, about, you know, what is it for you that you feel like keeps you from going to Jesus and letting him be your spring of living water? You don't have to answer that. We're going to quit right there. That'd be my final question to somebody. Okay. So I just want to ask you guys, talk to me a little bit about this illustration. Like, was there... I guess my question, let me ask a more specific question. Do you feel like, when you think about friends on campus, would this be the kind of a way that you could draw a picture? I mean, I'm just thinking, picturing yourself sitting at a table with a napkin, with a friend that you've already been in conversation with, you already know their life a little bit. I mean, would this kind of thing, would it work for you as a opening to conversation, to talk a little bit about where somebody's at, kind of where they're getting their needs met at? Did I? What did I do when I did this illustration? What did I do? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's important. You know, it's not all about you. It's like, I'm going to try to be honest about, this is where I've been. This has been a part of my journey. I'm just as, even though I'm trusting Jesus, that doesn't mean, even after I'm following Jesus, aren't we all still prone to go other places to try to get our needs met? I mean, we just do. That's reality. I think it's good to own that and be honest about it. So really, this is the one verse evangelism that I wanted to like to show you guys. I wanted to demonstrate it rather than just talk to you about it, because I feel like you're more able to remember it that way. This may be something that you're like, oh, I love that. I want to try to use that as a way to talk to some of my friends. Great. You may think, I hate that. I can't even imagine doing that with somebody. That's fine. It's not going to hurt my feelings. This is not like, you know, this perfect way to do it. But I do want to say to you, I hope that you guys will be thinking about ways to engage your friends who don't know Christ in conversations about important things, conversations about where they're really at spiritually. And I want to give you three resources. If you want to jot a couple of things down, if this topic interests you and you want to do a little more thinking about it. The first one is the book that I recommended a while ago, Unchristian. I highly recommend that you read this book. If any of you are from OU, I'm sure that the bookstore at OU has it. Kinnaman, I think it's Kinnaman. I got my copy at Barnes & Noble, but the OU bookstore I'm sure has it as well. So, Unchristian. The second book is called Just Walk Across the Room. And it's by a guy by the name of Bill Hybels. And I've just recently read that, and it's an inspiring book. It's full of stories. And really, it's a story of how he has just been a faithful friend to love some of his friends who are not yet Christians. And sometimes it took, you know, he loved them for years and years before they ever put their faith in Christ. And he just has been a faithful friend, and God has really honored that. The third resource I want to give you are the cards that are on the table. Let me tell you where I got them. You can go online. It's called Solarium. 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 And if you have any interest in owning a set of these cards, this is a Campus Crusade for Christ tool. I forgot to look up the exact website, but if you just Google Solarium, it'll take you to the site. Do you know it, Cindy?
I think it's My Solarium.
My Solarium. The other thing that's of interest to this, Campus Crusade has used this on some campuses where they lay these cards out on campus and then like try to get just total strangers to stop by and talk to them, and they'll ask them questions sort of like we did. And then they write down a lot of people's answers, and then they put them online. So there's a whole section on the website where people's answers are just compiled, like which image did people choose? What's the most common image that college students right now are choosing to say, that represents my life right now, and why? And it's really fascinating reading. But if you want a set of them, you can order them from Campus Crusade for Christ. Go to Solarium. I think it cost me $15 for this packet of 50 cards. And I love them. And I'm praying and looking for some creative ways that I can begin to just use these to engage some friends in conversation. Does anybody have I didn't give much time for questions. We're going to be done here. Anybody have a parting shot question before I pray for us? Hybels, Hybels. Hybels. Bill Hybels. Yeah.
We talked a lot about just personally getting to know people and listening to their potential as people and not judging their character and getting to know their problems. But I don't know, with personal experience, evangelism seems to hit me when I've already done that. And I'm trying to bring Christ in as a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Or something to hear me out in a way for me to participate. I hit the roadblock at the end.
Like, in other words, like leading them to make a decision at the end, is that what you're saying, or more?
Yeah, like they're totally interested in the conversation leading up to that, which is understandable. I mean,
sure.
Like just as valuable time.
Sure.
You know, as what you present to them, but I just find that that's been the roadblock, is once you've already gone through that, is actually.
So is the roadblock that you don't know what to say, or the roadblock is you find them sudden, they're suddenly like, okay, well, I'm done now.
Yeah.
Okay. I think, I don't know that I would, there's no right answer to that. Like, there's no way to say, okay, well, here's how you fix that, you know, because this is a relationship, okay? Focus, the organization that I'm on staff with, we use an illustration with our teams that go overseas. We call it, are there any Focus alums in here? Cindy, okay. We use an illustration called the link illustration. And basically what we try to say to our students is, here is what success looks like for you this summer. You're getting ready to go and spend 6 weeks in China sharing Christ with people. Success does not look like I led 50 people to know Jesus this summer. That is not what success looks like. But success looks like helping people take one step closer to Christ. And we sort of, we have this chain link that we put across the front of the room, and we talk about how everybody's life is like a link of chain of links. And everybody has different experiences when they're young, as they get older. You meet a Christian, you have a bad experience in church, then you meet somebody else who knows Jesus, and then you have a best friend maybe who like is killed in a car wreck or something tragic, and a grandmother who dies, and then you got a scholarship to a college that like suddenly gives you hope about life. And you know, everybody's life is filled with these links, and every one of those links is like one step where someone has a chance to come closer to Christ. And there comes a day where the final link, this is when they trust Christ. And you know, we don't always get to be the final link. So I would say to you, if you're involved in those kinds of conversations with your friends, and then you kind of get to the point where, okay, I'm ready to encourage them to go ahead and make a decision, and they're not ready, then go away and pray for them like crazy and say, you know what? We had a great conversation. They know that I love them. I've been listening to them. And I think they've taken some steps closer to Christ now. And I may not get to be that final link. Maybe one of your friends is going to get to be that final link. And I wouldn't hesitate to come back to them and have the conversation again. You know, people aren't always ready today to say, hey, Matt, so what's going to keep you from, what barrier keeps you from going to Jesus? Well, I'm not ready. I don't want to do it. Or this or that or the other. Okay, well, I'm going to pray for you. And then 6 weeks later, we may have this conversation again and say, I've been praying for you. You been thinking any more about Jesus? So don't give up on them. See, it's a process. Most of us came to Christ as a part of a process. You know, I didn't just wake up one morning and decide out of the blue, I'm going to become a Christian.